everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian M. Hauser. You can find me and this show everywhere that you get your content, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all at Hawk Blogger. And thanks to everybody who's been leaving reviews, giving the show likes. We have officially crossed the 30,000 subscriber threshold on YouTube. I kind of stopped with the milestones a while ago, but you guys just keep pushing us to new ones, and it's crazy. Honestly, when I started this last year, we were at around 7,000 subs, I think, and more than doubled last year, more than doubled this year, and it's very cool. It's very cool. I think we're growing something fun here, and I've heard from a lot of you, both in person and through the show, how much the community means to you, and it certainly means that to me as well, and it means that to the crew, the Real Hawk Talk crew. So thanks to everybody who has contributed to the community, to the show, all of that, our sponsors as well. And I made a promise that after we hit 30,000 subs, I would give away tickets to the next game. I did not know it was going to be this game, but here's where we are. And I'm a man of my word. So I will find a way to get tickets for this game and give them away to somebody. If somebody has extra tickets and they want to do me a solid, or they're a big fan of the show and they want to contribute in that way, I will not say no to a free pair of tickets or a reasonably priced pair of tickets. Save me a little bit. But in any event, I will make sure I will give away a pair of these tickets. And I'll tell you my main stipulation for who I'm going to give these tickets away to. You got to be subscribed everywhere, like YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Like, if you're not on Twitter, that's fine. But YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, at least. You got to be able to send me a screenshot that you are subscribed in all those places, and or followed, depending on which is appropriate. And I've got to be absolutely convinced that you're going to scream your freaking head off for the Seahawks on Thursday. Also, no, I am not new at this. I am not going to transfer these tickets until probably about an hour before the game, because I am not going to give these tickets away and allow someone to resell them. That's not the point of this. I'm going to spend money probably on these tickets to get the best possible set of Seahawks fans that are going to give the Seahawks the best possible chance to win this game on Thursday, not to make somebody money, not to have them end up in Rams fans' hands or some other random fans. Like, that's what it's going to be about. And I will put in the time I need, which is crazy because it's going to be a very tight week, to make sure that whoever gets these tickets is going to be rabid in those seats and also, you know, a nice person. But let's bring the noise on Thursday. So let me know if you got tickets that you want to offload. Obviously, I will be using HB Tix as well. Of course I will. If anyone else wants to offer things, let me know. And if you're interested in being the person to get them, now's a good time to start making your case. So there's a bunch to get to. Part of the reason I am a little bit late today, usually we do the morning after and HB mornings in the morning. That's kind of makes sense, right? Well, today I wanted to wait a little bit, partially because honestly, I have not been sleeping at all lately. I don't know what the deal is, I've not been sleeping much. And so I needed to, after I wrote my column this morning, the morning after, which is also was not one of my longest morning after columns, but I needed to crash for like a half an hour, get at least so my brain could work. I couldn't form thoughts. And then because it's a Thursday game, the whole week is compressed. So Mike McDonald not only had his press conference today at 12:30 at the VMAC, but then the locker room was open. So we were able to talk to some of the players. Players are usually, you know, recovering. We don't see them on Mondays. We don't see them on Tuesdays. So I went to the locker room. I actually talked to a number of players, and I'm going to share some of what I heard in those conversations. In fact, I've got some fun sound from Uchenna Nwosu that you're going to want to hear. I also talked to Riley Mills for the first time. I'll share some thoughts on that. And the full interviews for Uchenna Nwosu and Riley Mills are up already on patreon.com/hawkblogger. Best place to go to get ad-free audio of this show, as well as exclusive locker room stuff like that. So play that. But there is news. So let's get right to the news, because I know everybody's curious about what's going on with Charles Cross. And I'm going to try to find the right. I kind of had hoped that this was already going to be linked somewhere. I could put it out there, but I'm going to try to find it myself. But here's the update on Charles Cross. He has a hamstring injury. Charles Cross has a hamstring injury. Mike McDonald says they're doing everything they can for him to be available as soon as possible. When asked if there was a chance he would play this Thursday, he said there is a chance he'll play this Thursday. I think there is a chance he's going to play this Thursday. That's my read of it. Whether he can, don't know. But that I believe there's a chance he's going to play this Thursday. I do. If he was a wide receiver, maybe not. But I think as an offensive lineman, I think there's a shot. Now, the other thing that was news was I asked Mike McDonald intentionally, kind of an extreme or an edge, like a boundary setting question of, do you hope to get Torrey Horton, the receiver, back this year? And he was noncommittal about it. He was like, Torrey has got to get through a few milestones. And, you know, it did not sound promising. It did not sound promising that Torrey Horton will be back this year. Doesn't mean that he won't be. But I bet if you were to ask Mike McDonald to bet his house on whether he was back or not this year, it seems like the most likely answer is no. Now, that's just an interpretation. That's not a official report of that being the case. But if that's the case, two things. That's a shame, because Torrey Horton's been having a fantastic year, and he has been a big part of what has made the offense work. You know, Sam Darnold had a really good rapport with him, and they had literally just had a multi-touchdown game against the Commanders when things went the wrong way with his shin. And the other is, what a feather in the cap for John Schneider again to make that Rashid Shaheed trade. Like, I mentioned it on the post-game show, there's been this kind of, I don't know if kismet's the right term, but good fortune, where when one guy exits, another guy enters. You know, Torrey Horton exits, Rashid Shaheed's there. Cooper Kupp exited, Torrey Horton was there. You know, Elijah Arroyo goes down, Eric Saubert's there. There's just kind of been this good fortune of when the timing of some of these things have happened. But it's not good fortune that Torrey's out. And so we'll see. But I think the Rashid Shaheed, I mean, imagine where this team would be without Rashid Shaheed. Now, I don't think it would be as awful as maybe people are imagining. I think Cody White's played pretty damn well this year. He had that 60 plus yard touchdown in that Commanders game as well, and has been, I think, a pretty good part of this offense. Jake Bobo might have been a bigger contributor. There might have been other guys that step up. But I think you have to feel a lot better about your chances with Rashid Shaheed than without him, given all of that. So that is the kind of major news. There was also some stuff here. You know, I wanted to play for you one of the things. So there is a little bit of this clip here about Riley Mills. And I asked Mike McDonald, like, why? So first of all, let me just be really clear. I was talking to people on Twitter about this week, and with folks, I think, here. The fact that Riley Mills was activated this weekend did not, in my mind, mean that he was going to actually play in the game, or maybe even at all this season. By the way, I wasn't alone in that belief. Pretty much everyone in the press room felt the same way, that a lot of folks weren't even sure he would be activated at all, and that they might just redshirt him. But The fact is, you had Jared Ivey, you had Connor O'Toole, you have other rookies that have been sitting on the 53-man roster, Mason Richmond, Bryce Cabledew, that are not getting playing time. But they're on the 53 because the team wants to protect their roster spot and like their place with Seattle, and they want them practicing. They want them working with the team. So my assumption was that Riley Mills was going to be another one of those players. I would say shocked that he was active and that he played snaps in this game. I did not expect that. And you guys know, I like being wrong because when I'm wrong, I learn something. And so I wanted to learn why, like what it is about Riley Mills that is different and why they wanted to him play.
What is it about?
This is what Mike McDonald said about that.
Well, I mean, we're coming down the stretch and we really want him to be part of the equation here coming down the into the last quarter of the season. And he showed in practice that like we felt like he was executing a high level. So we felt like it was warranted for him to get the reps and he's been all cleared healthy, you know, physically. So there's really nothing holding him back going to the game. And I'm glad we did it, you know, now he's got some reps under his belt going into this game and, you know, going into the next couple weeks.
Now, this connects to I've had conversations with people in the Seahawks front office about their draft and about their planning and about like how they came, like the whole conversation, set of conversations I had about the John Schneider piece that I wrote. You know, we talked about all sorts of things that didn't make it into the article. And one of the comments I heard in that conversation was there was at least a player where, and I don't think this is a singular situation or instance, where John Schneider said, hey, we want to take this guy because he's going to help us in December. He's going to help us at the end of the year, even if he's not going to help right away. And I couldn't help but think that Riley Mills is one of those guys, and that John Schneider, like this might be one of the side effects. You could decide if it's good or bad, but I think it's one of the outcomes of John Schneider, the personnel guy, being at the top of the heap in terms of decision making. Now, it doesn't mean he's unilaterally telling people. If you read the article I wrote, you know that's not John's style. He doesn't go and dictate to people what to do. But I think there's some of his fingerprints here where he really believes in what Riley Mills can be for this team. And the fact that he's got a partner in Mike McDonald who is willing to roll this kid out there after an ACL injury, did not have training camp, has not played football in a year, and have him take snaps away from other players, that says a lot. It really does. And if you look at like where did those snaps come from, who lost snaps to make room for Riley, I mean, he only played 7 snaps, so I don't want to like blow this out of proportion. I'm just telling you, to me, this was very notable because they have a perfectly good defensive line rotation and didn't seem to me like they needed to make any changes there. But he played 7 snaps. Who saw a reduction in their snap count? Well, Brandon Peely is one. He went from playing around 20 to 30% of snaps to playing just 5 snaps. He played 8% of the snaps against the Colts. And Mike Morris went from around 10 to 12 snaps to 2 snaps in this game. And to me, that's noteworthy. I mean, Riley Mills played the 12% of the snaps. And then the other thing, and I hope this is already queued up, I haven't checked, but he was asked, Mike McDonald was asked, like, what is the role he was playing? Let's see if this is the right question here.
Challenge trying to get him acclimated so that he can produce.
It's not what to do with Riley. It's just block recognition and getting used to the speed of the game. Same thing like with Shaheed. It's just, you know, just on a different like level. It's going to take reps and making sure we're taking advantage of all those things, you know, so we can go play the way he knows how.
Position and role wise,
Abe is okay to my knowledge.
I'm sorry. Just with Mills, like with his position and his role, what do you see him doing? Is there some carryover with what you have Leonard do?
Well, we feel like he can play the A-gap too. Probably more than we're putting Leo, you know, in the A-gap. So, but he's got to keep on coming on. You know, I think Peely's been playing well. I mean, you know, now that we have Jay Reed back, Jay Reed can play both. So, I mean, if we can get him rolling, we got a pretty good front that we can put out there.
He was primarily end at Notre Dame, right? Did he do any
A-gap you saw? He did a little bit, but it was more, yeah, you're right. He was mostly like a 3 to 4 eye. I mean, the guy's 300 pounds, strong as an ox. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't be able to do it.
So we got to the question eventually. A lot of good stuff there on Riley Mills. There's a lot of conversation. We are true sickos that we're spending this much time on a guy that got 7 snaps. But the fact that he's talking about him as an A-gap player, for people that don't know A, like that is like over, like nose tackle essentially, right? And for them to have him there, which is not what I expected him to be playing. I thought he would be more of a 4 eye, like 3 tech kind of guy, like a Zach Allen-esque player. That's the comp that I most often hear as his high-end potential. So the fact that they've got him in the middle is interesting. And that also is kind of fascinating because not only are they putting him in there without all the other reps that he would have gotten in training camp, but they're asking him to play a position he didn't play in college, which is also interesting. Now, a defensive lineman will tell you, like, people make too much of the different shades, you know, on the defensive line. And, you know, you play a block the way you play a block and it's, you know, whatever. But it does matter. And it's just we're learning about the plans for Riley Mills. And I thought that was noteworthy in terms of the plan for him there. I will also say, you know, big fan of Riley Mills, fan of the draft pick, really hopeful he'll be a very big contributor for this team. Those were not good snaps that he took yesterday. It was not a good debut. He was getting washed out. He was overmatched in this game. And I'm not going to say that that's who he is. I'm just telling you, honestly, like what my eyes said, this was not a great game for him. But again, that doesn't mean it will always be bad, but I did not think this was his best stuff. Now we talk about PFF all the time and some people love that we talk about it. Almost nobody does actually, but I still do anyway. They tended to agree with my take on Riley Mills. They gave him the lowest grade of any Seahawk defender. He had a 28.6 grade and a 31.8 run defense grade. So, you know, I encourage you to go back and watch his 7 snaps yourself, decide for yourself, but that's kind of what I saw initially. So, you know, let's give the kid an opportunity to get his feet wet, but it does seem like they're planning to get him more involved. Other things. Was there anything else that I wanted to bring up there? Let's talk about Byron Murphy.
Absolutely dominant.
This was Mike McDonald kind of going off on his own, bringing up Byron Murphy, and listen to what he said here.
I'll tell you what, like Byron Murphy, this isn't your question, but Byron Murphy played a tremendous football game. He was absolutely dominant. Probably single-handedly won us the football game on defense. I mean, he absolutely played lights out. I know I didn't answer your question, but it's worth mentioning.
After the Rams game.
He goes on to explain what he did.
Just like,
let me see if I can get that.
I want Sam to play like I want our football. Shocking is like, hey, it's the Sam's demonstrated those and making plays. Guys taking on.
We wouldn't see that he did to fulfill his job.
I mean, this guy's taking on.
Okay, this is him talking more about
multiple blockers.
Murphy.
and making plays and being stout and making relentless like effort plays. It's remarkable what he's able to do. It really is. It's just remarkable. He's just playing really great football.
We do not hear Mike McDonald effusive that way about players, especially defensive players, that often. And, you know, this was the first draft pick of his tenure with Seattle. And there was a lot of folks that were worrying about what it would mean for Byron Murphy in his second season after he didn't put up a lot of numbers his first year. And sure sounds like the Seahawks are very happy with their choice. And this is a good example of where PFF does not get everything right. They get a lot of things wrong. And the Seahawks would disagree with the PFF grade for Byron Murphy. He had a 48.8 grade by their measure. Now, one of the things I've noticed and one of my kind of adjustments when I look at PFF stuff is I don't think they do a great job of accounting for the amount of blockers that a player's dealing with. So, and I don't think they give enough value to people that defeat a double team. To me, that's kind of like the equivalent of a big time throw for a quarterback. And I don't think they have anything like that for a defensive lineman. And they really heavily weight big time throws for quarterbacks. And, I don't think they have something to really heavily weight the kind of assignment that Byron Murphy's taking on. So I think he's been fantastic. And I actually, I checked in with him in locker room today, and his little one is doing well, which is cool. I think there's an interesting story there of Byron having a young premature kid and Derek Hall being, four lockers away and being a premature kid himself. And I was kind of talking to them both about that, but that's a story for another day. So that was kind of, I think, press conference wise, most of it. Again, headline, I think Charles Cross has a shot to play. Don't know for sure. And then other news stuff, I will just double check to see if there's any other Rams news that's coming. But the last I saw was that there was no update. I don't think Sean McVay is talking today to the press, or at least he has not yet. And, Devontae Adams and his availability is still a question mark. And then an interesting one to kind of be aware of, this is getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I'm not getting all the way into Rams coverage yet, but it's hard to not get all the way there, is Chris Shula, the defensive coordinator, was talking about Akella Witherspoon, their cornerback, who was one of their best corners last year. And then this year was playing for them. And then he busted his collarbone or something like that. He's been out for a while. He came off of IR and he's been active and played. But in the game yesterday against the Lions, he was inactive, like a healthy scratch. And this is what Chris Shula, the defense coordinator, said. Said the decision to make Akella Witherspoon inactive was about getting the best players active for the best roles. Darius Williams was banged up the week before, so Witherspoon was needed more. Sounds like he's the fourth outside cornerback at the moment. Not ideal. This is going to be a different matchup than it was the first time. The first time they came in, or the Seahawks went down there, Rashid Shaheed was playing in his second game. He still almost made, he made some plays and almost made, a huge play in the touchdown that was a little bit, that was a great play by Emmanuel Forbes to break it up. But the Rams cornerback situation has been exposed quite a bit of late. And we're going to see if the Seahawks can take advantage of that. So that's, I think, most of the news. Let me rewind and and for a second talk about this game and talk about some of the things I talked about in my morning after column today, because obviously the largest part of this reaction to this game is, man, we're not playing very well. I think that's the general reaction. The other reaction is the offense is not going to cut it. It's not doing well enough. And there's truth in some of that. The defense has been playing pretty well. What are they allowed? One touchdown in the last 12 quarters or something like that? I mean, defense is playing pretty well. The special teams is playing really well. You could say they made massive contributions to the last two games, at least. Rashid Shaheed had the 100-yard touchdown return. I think Mike Dixon actually had an underrated game yesterday as well, had some field switching, at least one really good punt that changed field position. And then obviously you have Jason Myers making six field goals, including a 56-yarder win. So the special teams is playing really well. And then the offense, I mean, the offense, you know, put up a ton of points and yards in the second half against Atlanta late last week. And they actually ran the ball pretty well against the Vikings in the second half the week before to salt away that game. But it hasn't been perfect. And one of the things I kind of want to just share, I know exactly what the reaction is going to be, but I'm going to share this anyway, because I think there's an aesthetic style of football that's pleasing, where it's like every box is checked. And generally the most pleasing offense, like game, is when the offense is playing well and they're scoring points. That just feels better. You feel like you're in good shape. When the defense is playing really well, but the offense is struggling, it doesn't feel quite as good. Like, let me give you two examples. The Bucks versus Seahawks game earlier this year. I think a lot of folks felt more positive about that game than they did about the game where the Seahawks, won last night, let's say. Like, now, I picked those two games because they're both close, but they're both different scripts. And the first one was the offense was just electric, right? Like, Sam Darnold was tossing it all over the place. He and Baker Mayfield were going back and forth. And there's a lot of frustration with the defense, but generally people felt pretty good, right? Last night, you had a defense play pretty well against the Vikings is another example. You had a defense playing unbelievable football. And that yet, people didn't like the Vikings game that much, even though they won 26-0, because the offense just was ugly, right? So I bring that up because I have found over the years that truly great teams have the widest range of ways to beat their opponent. Sometimes it's going to be they need to win it with offense. Sometimes it's defense. Sometimes rarely it's special teams, but special teams does, you know, it's that X factor. And it even gets more granular. Teams that can win with their passing offense, teams that can win with their rushing offense, teams that can win with their pass defense, rush defense, pass rush, coverage, all those things. People that can win with power run versus outside, like all of these nuances. The more things that you do well, the more chances you have to have an advantage and get a foothold against your opponent. And so I don't hate these games quite as much as I think some folks do. I think that the game against the Rams could look wildly different. Like, and I can imagine, it wouldn't shock me if people were like, well, where was this offense, you know, the last few weeks? How did they do this against the Rams? I'm not predicting that they're going to have some big 40-point game, but it wouldn't shock me if the offense does play better in that game. It's just kind of the way of football. Like, things happen this way. Now, I'm not explaining it all away and saying don't worry about it. In fact, I'm going to give you some numbers about what I think's going on or some things that are contributing to why it's that way. But as one like little bit of evidence about a style that you can play, because I hear people say, I've heard this like 20 times already about the game yesterday. People say, well, you can't play offense like that and hope to beat a good team. Well, I think that's bullshit. Like, honestly, I think your chances are lower, But you absolutely can beat a good team if you play good enough defense. And as evidence to that, I looked in Seahawks history. There have been 26 games where the defense held an opponent under 20 points and under 280 yards of offense. Okay. Which, by the way, the Rams scored 21 points and had 249 yards of offense the first matchup. Okay. So one criteria, hold a team under 20 points and 280 yards of offense. Second criteria, or if you want to count it third, however you want to think about it, that your offense has more than 300 yards. It's not a lot, but more than 300 yards. And you turn it over zero times. That's the key. That is the script that is a defensive game. And the Seahawks have had that script 26 times in their history. Of those 26 games, they are 26-0. So don't tell me that you can't win a game when you get really good defense and you protect the football. Pete Carroll did that all the time. And so I'm not going to belabor this point, but I just think it's ugly. I was like the only person on the planet that liked the 6-3 game last year in Chicago where the defense was just suffocating. They gave up 3 points. To me, that was a fantastic performance in a game where your offense was giving you absolutely nothing. And honestly, your special teams couldn't do much because the weather was so bad. That was an outstanding performance. Now, it was ugly, but it was a win. So I like that this team has that ability to play that style if they need to. But here's the rub. And I think this is what most people, I don't know if it's what they mean, but this is what I take from it and what I agree with. You have a much lower chance of being on the winning side if your offense is scuffling. Because now you have fewer ways to beat the opponent. Now you have to have the defense dominant. You have to have them hold teams down. You have to have the special teams be special. And the Seahawks offense, I don't know if I'd say it's scuffling to the point where it's bad, but it is certainly not firing on all cylinders. And some of the things that I found when I was looking this morning at this, so I'll share my screen here so you guys can see what I'm looking at. I'll put this up here so you guys can take a look. Make sure you give the show a like and click subscribe if you haven't already. So this is the Seahawks EPA per rush by week, okay? And you might be like, well, wow, it's a lot of red. Well, yeah. Part of that's the Seahawks, but part of it is rushing is running the ball by analytics is always considered, almost always considered a bad choice. It's usually a less efficient way to move the football. We're not going to have that debate here. But to give you some reference, negative point, I think it's negative 0.015. That is the 10th ranked run offense in the NFL by the Atlanta Falcons. So even the 10th best offense in football, 10th best or 10th most efficient rushing offense in the NFL is still negative. And I'm going to double check my numbers here because I caught something that looked a little bit different. So wait, okay. So this is offense? What is going on? Sorry, the numbers are not looking like what they look like this morning, so I'm confused. All right. So the 10th ranked offense is negative 0.025. For whatever reason, I'm getting different numbers now than I did this morning. Not sure why. But in any event, that's the case. So you see that for the Seahawks, a lot of their games are not close to that. You're talking about negative 0.26, negative 0.38, negative 0.31. To give you an idea, like it was negative 0.31 against the Colts. That would rank 31st in the NFL in terms of rushing efficiency. And one factor that you have to wonder about there is Jalen Sundell. He's back in the lineup. Is this a center thing? Is Oluwatimi part of it? Don't know. And if you look at when Olu played, it started in week 10, the second half when Jalen Sundell got hurt. But he really played for these four games, week 11, week 12, week 13, week 14. Their only positive, well, there's one other positive, but really their best running game of the season came in week 12. And Olu was at center. And then you get your first game back with Jalen Sundell, and it drops to negative 0.31. I'm not going to put this all on Jalen Sundell, but I do want to call out, like, that's something to keep an eye on, because they have not had a rushing game where the results were that bad since week 6. So it's been a while. This was a very, very bad rushing game for the Seahawks, and they had been better. So that's one part of this. The other part of it, though, is their EPA per pass, their passing efficiency, has also been trailing off. And you can see all these big green bars early in the season. You had four in a row, like very clearly positive from week 3 to week 6. Then you have week 9 and week 10, both solidly positive. So you had had, you know, basically, what was that? 6 out of 7 games where it was hugely positive. And then week 11 is going against the Rams. And believe it or not, that was not their worst efficiency passing game. But since then, you've just kind of seen the efficiency trail off. It's going the wrong direction. And in this game yesterday, they were barely, like, they're basically a neutral, like an ineffective passing game. And one of the things I've started to notice with Sam Darnold is that his comfort has seemingly changed in the pocket. I think there's a lot of things that can be contributing to that. Some of it's him, some of it's coaching, some of it's play calling, some of it's the players he's playing with, some of it's protection. Like, there's a lot of things that are going on. So this is not just a Sam Darnold thing. But one of the points of evidence, the last data thing I'll show you guys here, is his time to throw was a real big story to start the year, where he went from a guy that was over 3 seconds toward the bottom of the NFL in time to throw with the Vikings last season to being one of the faster time to throw guys this season. Well, slowly but surely, that time to throw is creeping up. He has been over 3 seconds to throw in 3 of the past 5 games. And one of the other games, he was 2.94. So let's call it 4 out of the last 6 games. 4 out of the last 6 games. And last night, or yesterday, it was 2.83, which is also not particularly fast. That would have been one of the slowest time to throws over the first, you know, 9 weeks of the season. So why is Sam Darnold taking longer to get rid of the football? First thing is because his first read isn't there. That's the first thing. If you think about the second half of the Falcons game, he was hitting wide open players. And that is credit to Clint Kubiak, credit to the players for running the right routes and all that kind of stuff. But he had a lot of pretty clear reads to get rid of the ball. Those teams, I think, are starting to figure out the Seahawks' tendencies and preferences about where they want to go, and they're taking away some of their favorite plays. They're making them play left-handed a little bit more, you know, off-handed. And so that, I think that's causing Sam to not have his first read as often. But it's not just that, because one of the things I really remember is the first practice I ever watched of Sam Darnold in OTAs. This was the infamous one where Mike Salk, it was so bad that Mike Salk asked Mike McDonald if there was a quarterback controversy, and Mike McDonald laughed at him. But his feet were just wild. They were, he looked so frantic. And then the first half of the season, his feet were so calm. And he was going through his, I remember Dan Orlovsky of ESPN making a cut up and just showing his, how smooth his feet were and how he was going through progression. Like, he was teach tape for how calm his body was. In fact, they were showing, I think there was a one where they were contrasting him with CJ Stroud in the Houston game, where CJ Stroud looked so uncomfortable and making all these terrible decisions and throws. And now when I watch Sam's feet, I don't see the same calm that I saw earlier. I see a little bit of that frantic side. And again, that might be related to the reads, but he was going through progressions before, and that implies his first read wasn't there. So it can't all be that Clint Kubiak is not scheming things up right. Some of this is Sam. Like, that might be that maybe it's a confidence thing. Maybe that game against the Rams really shook his confidence. Maybe it is a Mike McDonald kind of threw down the gauntlet thing of like, hey, we got to stop turning the ball over. You guys need to be more careful. And he has become more cautious, which has caused him to be less sure of what he's doing. Possible that that's the case. It is true that the Seahawks have, they'd only turned the ball over zero times once in their first, let me bring it up. I think it's like 11 games. I'll tell you for sure. The Seahawks had only turned the ball over zero times once in their first 10 games. All right. And then they've done it twice in their last four. And they had turned the ball over two or more times in six of their first 10 games. They've only turned the ball over twice once out of the last four games. So they're protecting the ball better, but I think it's coming at the expense of explosiveness. And I think it's coming a little bit at the expense of Sam Darnold feeling confident in what he's doing back there. The other thing that I think shows up here is I think Sam's like, okay, take a sack. He's been told it's okay to take a sack. We've heard Mike McDonald praise him for taking good sacks. So clearly that's been a conversation. He has taken more sacks. I think that's an uncomfortable thing for Sam Darnold, who's been absolutely harassed for taking too many sacks and not getting rid of the football before. So I think he came into this season with this idea of, I'm going to get rid of the football. I'm not going to be the guy getting sacked. And he was doing that at like record pace. And now it was this, well, no, we kind of want you to get sacked sometimes. That's a tough little thing to kind of adjust in your mind on the fly. And then additionally, now he's being told, yeah, run some more. And he doesn't look comfortable doing that. He wants to throw it down the field. When he's running, I don't think against the Falcons, it looked natural. Against the Colts, it did not. And, you know, he had the fumble. He was getting hit. Like, it was not good. So I think there's a lot going on in his head, and I wish it wasn't so much. I wish it would just quiet down. And I wish, like, personally, I want him to get back to just ripping it. Yes, I know he threw four picks, but that was the version of Sam Darnold that I think gives them the best chance to win. And I think there's, if you get back to ripping it, I still think you can like make little alterations off of that situationally. I think play calling wise, you can call more run plays on third and short. There's all sorts of things that are like, play the same way, but we're going to protect you a little bit more, or we're going to make this one sight adjustment or whatever. But right now it feels like there's too much going on for him. Now, at the same time, I will say he wasn't that bad yesterday. Like, he didn't throw a touchdown pass. I thought he missed Rashid Shaheed in the end zone, but he throws for 275 yards, no picks. led what could have been two game-winning drives. Like, I think that that's okay. But I also want to see him – I want to see him threatening defenses more. He needs guys like JSN to catch those passes like he almost always does, and he needs his receivers to do their jobs. He needs his offensive line to do better, all those things. But that was kind of, you know, one aspect I wanted to spend a little bit of time on. The other is, you know, I still feel like, I think you can still feel they're working Rashid Shaheed in. It still feels like week four of training camp as opposed to week 15 of the regular season in terms of how that's fit. And I think they're still finding their way with that. I think they're making progress, which is good, but it's not quite there. And an underrated aspect of this game yesterday, I thought, was Cooper Kupp. I thought he played a really good game. And I thought that he made some really key decisions to stay inbounds and take on blocks or take on defenders, fight for extra yardage. I thought it was a really, really good game for Cooper Kupp yesterday. The other thing that I wanted to talk about relative to kind of where this is all going is Seahawks passing offense has actually faced some pretty good pass defenses of late. It doesn't feel like it, but the fact of the matter is the Falcons, the Colts, and what was the other team? I had this in my article, so maybe I can find it really quick. The Falcons, the Colts, it wasn't the Titans, the Vikings. They're all top 13 pass defenses by DVOA. And you might say, well, the Colts are missing their cornerbacks, and that's absolutely true. But they're well coached. And I think the Seahawks passing offense has been facing some stiffer competition. That might be a good thing in that they're kind of building their big boy muscles against better defenses in that regard. And if you look at DVOA overall, forget just pass offenses. If you look at who the Seahawks offense has faced so far, their schedule, they have faced the ninth most difficult slate of defenses in the NFL. So they've had a really tough go. The rest of the season, they face the 20th. Now, the Rams are really good, but the Panthers and 49ers are not, at least from a DVOA perspective, particularly good defenses. I think that it's not going to really matter much. These games are all going to be tight and hard fought because there's going to be so much on the line. But the main point there is the Seahawks have faced some really good defenses that bring unique things, unique pressure packages, unique talents. And I think that's also part of what's been leading to some of these false starts. I don't mean the penalty. I just mean the slow starts on offense. So I don't know. That's a long monologue about what's going on there. But I think those are some of the things that have got my attention. I have some fun sound from Uchenna Nwosu. I'm going to play for you in just a second. But I mean, this is a game you got to go to. You got to go to. If you haven't decided, now is the time to decide. And the good news is I got some help for you to be able to get in the door. Take advantage. Good stuff over there at SeatGeek. And that's not the only good deal. If you want to get some great gear, go to simplyseattle.com. Use promo code HawkBlogger15. Not only will you get 15% off, but you will also be able to have 5% of your purchase go directly to Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient Family Assistance Fund, which provides vital help for transportation and temporary lodging for patients fighting for their lives. Also, if you get one of the Simply Good hoodies, which are very, very cool, they're $25. Another $5 from that purchase will go to the same Fred Hutch fund. So get a great deal for yourself, for your loved ones, for the holidays, whatever it is that you like. And then do some good by having it help people that are fighting for their lives over at Fred Hutch. So simplyseattle.com, code HawkBlogger15. jkboots.com/hawkblogger, best deal on the best boots you're ever going to get. Put that in your browser. You'll get your own promo code to get your special deal. and go to Sleeper. Download the Sleeper app. Grab your favorite fantasy football info. Obviously, NBA, NHL, whatever it is that you love that's going on, you can find on the Sleeper app. And you can also get, if you use promo code Hawks, you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right. Let me check to see if we've got any injury news yet. I don't know if they're going to be reporting injury news today. The Seahawks are kind of doing their walkthrough today, so it's going to be an estimated kind of thing, but we'll see. All right, before I play the Uchenna Nwosu sound, I want to get to your super chats, which are awesome. We're going to start with the ones that are on Venmo, which is really cool. There's one. So we'll get one Venmo super chat. You can do the venmo.com/Brian-Nemhauser. That means 100% of the super chat goes to me, which is really nice. And you can help contribute to me helping to pay for these Rams tickets I'm going to be giving away. All right. So Josh McClelland says the Evan Hill paperwork session was peak content. Jason's leg single-handedly placed the Hawks at 11-3. Well, I agree. It was amazing. I included that in my morning after column. Evan's the best, man. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but that guy cracks me up and he's a good pal. And he's always going to be there. So whether people like it or not, Evan, the crew is here to stay. All right. Hawks fan RT41K, I think, was trying to ask. Oh, looks like he's the next one up. Great. Says, you are not sleeping right now, Brian, because the football is so good again. Maybe. I don't find myself feeling that way. I mean, I like the football, but I don't know. I just it's been rough the last couple nights. So hopefully maybe it's a night to take a little something to help me and knock me out. I think it's probably time. All right. Thomas BTT, who's been a member for 16 months, says, so excited to be there Thursday night. Really hoping it feels like those primetime games versus the 49ers in the early 2010. Go Hawks. I love that from you, Thomas, because that's what I want too. Like, that's honestly part of why I talk about the fact that not everyone's bought in, and it's a shame. Like, everyone can fan however they want, but it is so much fun when people are just like, man, I'm going to like pour my heart into this team and we're just going to will this team to a win. It used to feel like opponents did not understand. It used to really feel like that there was this extra person. It really felt like a 12th man. And it was such an advantage when Seahawks were playing at home, and it just doesn't feel that way to me anymore. It's not like it's bad, but it just doesn't feel as intimidating. And part of what fed those home field advantages was, we've talked about all the stuff with the ticketing and all that's clearly a role, but just the amount of passion for what the team's doing and the buy-in and the love. And I would love to see that back. In fact, part of my criteria for who I give these tickets to will probably be someone maybe that used to be a season ticket holder that either can't afford it anymore or, you know, whatever. Like, let's bring back some of the old crew, the OGs, get this thing rocking again. All right. Brady Crimmin says, what do you make of Utes not being active? Load management or performance concerns? Would trade that Brady Russell drop for some extra help in run blocking? Yeah, that was a shame. I mean, I don't think Robbie's had quite the season that he or the rest of us hoped for so far. I don't think it's that it's been bad, but I don't think it's quite clicked all the way yet. And I think a lot of the run game has been the same way. I was talking to Eric Saubert in the locker room today and Anthony Bradford and other guys. And it's like one block away. And so I don't know. I think it's something to watch. I would not assume that he's going to be active the rest of the year. I also wouldn't assume that this will happen ever again. He might be active the rest of the year. I don't know. It's just something to watch. It is a shame to me that he has not been the one that's got a chance to have a ball thrown his way. I think he looked very good as a receiver of the football in preseason. And I love Brady Russell. I really, really am happy he's on this team. He's dropped two passes this year. Like, well, one was a pass and one might have been a fumble or something. I don't know. I think it was two passes. But there's two times that the ball's come to him and it's dropped. And I know he's killing himself about it. And I'm not trying to hammer the guy, but I would have liked Robbie to be the one to get that because I think he's shown the ability to do it. So we'll just see. We will see. Mend 509 says, why does the offense struggle so much when pinned deep? Feels like Sam usually gets sacked or turns the ball over on that side of the field. You know what? Let's do a quick check. I don't know if this is how accurate this is going to be, but I'm going to look at all drives that start inside of the 20-yard line this year and how the Seahawks compare to other teams in that regard. So we're going to say the drive start is inside, let's say inside their own 10, okay? Let's say the drive starts inside their own 10. And let's see where the Seahawks rank in various metrics. All right. So the Seahawks have the number one most drives started within their own 10-yard line. They have 20 of those drives. To give you an idea, the New York Jets have only 7. So Seahawks are, you were seeing a lot of it. So that might be part of it. Their average yards per drive in that situation, it ranks like middle of the pack, 4, 8, 12, 16. They average 38 yards per drive when they start inside their own 10. Their percentage of those drives that they score on, 35%. Would you believe that? They rank 9th. In the NFL in percentage of drives started in their own 10 that they scored on. Now turnovers, this is probably the thing that you remember the most. The Seahawks are the third highest percentage of turning the ball over once they're inside their own 10, 25%, 5 times. Only Minnesota and Detroit have a higher percentage. And as far as total turnovers, the Seahawks are number one in total turnovers in that regard. So that's probably part of what you're feeling. And then let's just look at touchdowns. They don't have a ton of touchdowns from those drives. They rank toward the bottom, like bottom half, like probably like 18th in that. But again, from a scoring percentage perspective, they're top 10. So a little of this is perception versus reality. And I think that they've actually gotten better at it of late. I'm going to do one more thing here, just because I'm curious and it's easy to do. Drive start inside own 10, right? And then we're going to say after week 10, just to random list. All right. Now they still rank number one in number of drives started inside their own 10. And in terms of ones that score, it's dropped. So they've gotten actually worse in terms of scoring. Good news. Maybe this is why. It's not that good of news. So they have turned the ball over 4 times, 31% of the time. So that's like my perception's wrong. Like it hasn't, I thought it's been getting better, but at least by this like cut, it's not getting that much better. So that gives you way more than you expected for your question, but thank you for the super chat. Jay-Z says, I'm worried about the run game. Our run blocking's poor and I'm starting to think it's never going to get going. Are you getting more worried about it? Yeah. And so is Mike McDonald. Mike McDonald in his press conference today said, it's getting late. Like, we got to do it. It's enough. So, this to me, that is the number one thing that Clint Kubiak can't lean on. And so it's forcing them to go back to these passes that are meant to be counters to run plays, and the run plays aren't working well enough. has put him in a tough spot. So this might be something that just doesn't get fixed this year. And it might be the thing more than Sam Darnold. The run game might be the thing that keeps the Seahawks from meeting their ultimate goals, which I hope that's not the case, but it might be. We'll find out. Old School Seahawk, who's been a member for 16 months, says, congratulations on 30,000 subscribers on YouTube. Amazing work. Thanks, man. And thanks for being here for a lot of that ride. Loud Hawker says, Brian, and it's with an I. I am definitely not a Brian with the Y guy. I just want to be really clear. I have strong feelings on that topic. What is your process for determining what questions you will ask at pressers? As a fan, don't you just want to ask the coaches like Kubiak to explain themselves sometimes? Thanks, as always. That's a good question. My process has evolved in terms of how I ask questions. I usually, throughout the week, throughout every day, something will come up in my head, and I've got a running list of questions for a bunch of different individuals, and I just add a new question to my, backlog of questions for those people. And sometimes it's the right time to ask those questions, and sometimes it's not. And I just kind of try to assess when's the best time to ask them. And one thing I will just say is, I think the Seahawks were probably wondering if I was going to be a quote typical fan. I don't know if that's the right way to frame it, and just be a little bit belligerent or sensationalistic about things. And what I know about people is that if I try to ask a gotcha question, I'm going to get a shit answer. Like, it's not a good way to get people to open up. If people are feeling defensive or feeling like they're being attacked or they're being tricked or whatever, maybe you get them once, but then they're never going to talk to you again and you're never going to get anything interesting. But more likely, if you ask them a question in a way that gives them some space to maneuver and also feels like a genuine question based in curiosity and good intent, I think you get way more interesting answers. So that's been like, I have three rules for my questions to decide if I think I asked a good question. And it doesn't have to hit all three, but if it hits any of them, then I'm generally going to feel good about it. One is, do I learn something about the person? Second one is, do I learn something about football? And the third one is, does it get me or other people more excited or engaged about Seahawks football? And there's a bunch of things that fall under those categories, but those are the three kind of North Stars for me when I am trying to think of my questions. Super Sauce XL, member for 19 months. OG, wonder how they approach the offense if Cross is out. Well, I think Josh Jones will be in. And I'll say, I thought Josh Jones was a really tough watch during training camp. It was really, really rough. He got better. And then in preseason, he actually played pretty well. Like, I was kind of eating my words a little bit. I thought he looked really good in some of those games, and he has been getting in as an extra tackle. So it's not like he hasn't played at all, but yeah, Charles Cross would be a huge loss, especially in this game. But it's good news is hamstring. Hopefully this is, Mike McDonald said that there's a chance he could play this Thursday. If he can play this Thursday, or there's a chance, then it certainly is not season ending. You got to do what you got to do. And like, look, the Rams are without Rob Havenstein. They're playing Warren McClendon, who's been playing really well for them at right tackle. Unfortunately, because he's playing better than Havenstein did. And Havenstein was part of the problem for the Rams pass protection in the first game. So that's getting ahead a little bit. But teams got to play with who. I mean, they might be without Davante Adams for all we know with a hamstring injury. This is part of it. So I think you just got to do what you got to do. All right. Looks like there are some more super chats coming in. These two. And then I'm going to get to the Achenna Nwosu sound. Kelly Martinez. Hey, Kelly says it's in May. It was, if we're good at one thing, it'll be running the ball. That's what we're worst at. Thoughts on Utes as a healthy scratch, Sundell coming back, and the O-line being a turnstile. I don't think the O-line's a turnstile. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's accurate. And I mean, let's look at the Seahawks numbers yesterday and let's look at their pass protection in particular. The Seahawks gave up 9 pressures yesterday. Like, they had, gosh, I mean, everyone other than Gray Zabel on the offensive line had a 70 or above pass block grade from PFF. And yeah, I don't think I know that, like, Corbin was really kind of pressing Mike McDonald that there was a bunch of mistakes and free runners, and Mike McDonald kind of disagreed and whatever. I'm not going to get involved with their little back and forth, but I didn't feel like it was terrible. I don't think it was great, but I didn't feel like that was an issue. The run game stuff we just talked about, so I won't go back over that, but it is a mystery to me. I thought it would take the longest for the run game to get going, but once it did, it would be great. Just hasn't hit. It has not hit. And it may be a full offseason with the same offensive line, or maybe they get another person that they add or whatever for it to hit. I don't know. I do not have the answer. I wish I did, Kelly. All right. Ransom Cornwall says, great article this week and great coverage of the team, Brian. Go Hawks and beat the Rams. Well, thank you, Ransom. I appreciate it. And Ransom is also gifted a Hawk Blogger membership, which I really appreciate. All right. I promised it. I teased it. Let me play a couple bits of sound from Uchenna Nwosu about this rematch with the Rams. The first game, the first sound I'm going to play is I asked him about
going back and
whether he's looking forward to, you know, like, what he's looking like forward to about away this, with their rematch. First game. And this is what Uchenna said.
We didn't play up to our standards, both offense, defense. Defensively and special teams wise. So we will come back on this Thursday, play complimentary football, you know, but really show them what we're about and got a chance to get after them.
So that was the first bit. And you could just kind of hear in there that he feels like there's definitely some unfinished business in that game. But then this is a good example of the way this next one is of how I try to frame a question to get a better answer. There's, like, I could have framed this as, hey, Puka Nacua said that, you know, he's making fun of Sam Darnold after that game and talking about him seeing ghosts and clowning on him. What do you say? I could have tried to get him to kind of fire back. But I framed the question differently. And I'm not going to pull you into any kind of war words.
But, like, after that game against the Rams, answer,
which I also
there's some of those guys talking about your quarterback and clowning on him. And, you know, winners get to say whatever they want to say. But at what point do games become kind of personal and like rivalries for the players and not just like fans?
Yeah, I mean, you got a player, you know, doing all this talking and all this, you know, loud mouthing. You know, you got something to prove. You know, of course, you had our number last game, but, you know, it's best. That's why we play you twice. You know, you gotta prove it again. You gotta come this time. You gotta come better. So, yeah, they do all that loud mouthing and talking. But we gonna see who's more dominant on Thursday. Who's more physical team on Thursday?
I can't wait. I cannot wait. I know this team is so eager to play this game, and I hope they're able to express their, like, the quality of what this team has become in that game in a way that they just couldn't in the first game. Like, it just didn't, and despite a lot of things that did go well for them on defense and you know, even on offense, like, it's to this point, I think, well, let me look, that was at the time the highest yardage game against the, it still is. No team, even the Lions, who put up 34 points, The 414 yards that the Seahawks had on offense is the most that the Rams defense has given up all year. And the 249 yards of offense is the second lowest amount of yards that the Rams offense had all year. The 21 points the Rams scored is by far, like, is the only game in their last eight where they scored less than 28 points. They've scored more than 40 points in three of those games. They scored more than 34 points in five of those games. So a lot went well for the Seahawks, even though it didn't feel that way. And I think this team has really been looking forward to this game, and I hope that they are able to bring every bit of themselves that they can to it. It's tough on a Thursday night, but it's going to be tough for the Rams as well. Weather's going to probably be shitty, and we'll see. We will see between now and then what's going on between these two teams. All right, I think there was another super chat that came in while I was talking. It says, Brett Nuendo says, do you think our run game reflects Kubiak's coach's ability? Teams possibly scouting him? Was our running back coach part of his team? Kennedy Polamalu was with the Seahawks last year, and, you know, they have some familiarity with each other, but he did not come with Clint Kubiak. And I don't know. I mean, I made this point in my hawkblogger.com article this morning that people forget that Clint Kubiak's never had a chance. He's never been on a team like this. He's never coached an 11-3 team going towards the playoffs, maybe the number one overall seed, and had other defenses like doing everything they could to slow him down. When he was with the Vikings, when he was with the Saints, those games were not that meaningful toward the end of the season, and they weren't the target. And not only that, but he hasn't even had a chance to go through an off season in the same place and try to make adjustments and grow from the foundation he'd started. So all this is pretty new for Clint Kubiak. And I think he's a smart guy. I think he's working his tail off. I think Mike McDonald's helping as best he can. But it's hard. And he is not the most experienced at it. And so I cut him some slack. But we'll see. We'll see how things go the rest of the year, because sometimes he's been got. And that's just the reality of it. All right, folks. I will be back with you tomorrow for what will be the Matt Hasselbeck episode. I will also see you at some point this week for Real Hawk Talk. I'll figure out with the guys and gals who will be on with me and tell you when that will be. We'll do First Look on Wednesday. I got all sorts of stuff coming up. I think Mike Sando is going to be on with me on Thursday instead of Friday this week. So we'll talk about that then. But I'll talk with him about the game then. And then obviously we'll have the post game show Thursday night. So tons and tons of stuff coming up. Can't wait. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks again for the 30,000 subs. And thanks again for folks who, if anyone's looking to offload their game tickets for this one, wants to help a brother out, I will find a really, really good home for them. So I need two tickets for the Rams game so that I can get them to a absolute fanatical Seahawks set of fans. Until then, I am Brian M. Hauser, and that will be it for this episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care, y'all.